manipulating and using people to meet their desires. For example, on a date, flirting, teasing, kissing, and caressing are inducements to sex for the narcissist. A woman may want to stop at some point and go no further, but the narcissistic personality feels entitled to do as he pleases. So for him, the words no and stop have no meaning. Those words are speed bumps, not stop signs. This is what we mean when we say that the narcissist has no boundaries. Every time you hear of yet another CEO who lies about the financial worth of the company and puts his or her employees at risk financially, you're witnessing a narcissistic personality in action. Jeffrey Keith, Jeff Skilling, and Kenneth Lay were responsible for the collapse of Enron in 2001, at the time the biggest corporate bankruptcy in U.S. history. Both were convicted of conspiracy and fraud, but that was little consolation to stockholders who had been lied to, and to the more than 20,000 Enron employees who were encouraged to invest in a company near collapse. They lost their jobs and their life savings. To allow something like this to happen requires a shocking degree of self-entitlement and grandiosity and a gross lack of empathy, qualities that the narcissistic personality has in abundance. When we read or hear about a priest, camp counselor, or coach who sexually violates a child, we're talking about a narcissistic personality who doesn't respect human rights. Ever notice that when these individuals get caught, they don't apologize? They don't because they felt entitled to violate children in the first place. When I look at Jerry Sandusky, retired Penn State coach and convicted serial child molester, I see a narcissistic personality and a deplorable human being who used children like a theme park. Not one apology came from his mouth. He deserves scorn as well as a lifetime in prison. He may have been a revered coach who did nice things, but he wasn't a good person. That is part of the narcissistic pathology. Needs to control. People sometimes joke that they're control freaks, but if you've ever had a controlling boss or mate, you know it's no joke. A woman named Matilda fell for a handsome man who, like her, was from Latin America. She remained at home while he worked, and he was always on top of the family finances. That worked well in the beginning, but after a while his control became suffocating. She grew tired of having to ask him for money for groceries, new clothes, and Christmas gifts. When she'd bring this up, he'd say, "Don't I take care of you? Haven't I given you everything? You shouldn't worry about such things." He left her not long ago for another woman. This man, who at first seemed so generous, kept Matilda so much under his control that she had no idea how much money was in the bank, or even where the money was. Now in her 50s, she's working several jobs. She has no money in the bank, no credit, no retirement savings, and he is unresponsive to her pleas. Her self-worth is as low as her financial worth. She tells me tearfully, "I have nothing, and I gave him everything." Here's a woman who placed her trust in someone who robbed her of her freedom and dignity. How did it get this way? As most things like this do, one step at a time into the abyss of life with a narcissist. Narcissists often seek positions where they can control others. That's why you tend to see more of them in jobs such as law, medicine, and politics, or in high-level executive positions where they can use their rank or status to take care of themselves. I recall an interviewee for an FBI position saying to me, "Once I get that badge, nobody will mess with me anymore." Needless to say, his application was rejected as soon as he left the room. It's not unusual for narcissistic individuals to seek jobs where they can exercise power and authority to control others rather than to help others. In the end, it doesn't matter how high or low the position or the title, it will be used for the narcissistic personality's own gain. When you read that a member of a club, organization, or association is a self-centered tyrant, or someone who has been embezzling money for years, think first and foremost of a narcissist. That is what they do. Words that describe the narcissist. Over the years, I have collected the words of those who have lived with, worked with, or have been victimized by dangerous personalities. These are the words of those I've interviewed, or who called the FBI or me personally, requesting assistance. When asked to describe these dangerous individuals, most people aren't politically correct and may not know clinical or medical terms, but they speak from the heart because of their trauma, hurt, or fear. These are their uncensored words, not mine. Perhaps some will sound familiar to you in describing someone you know. These words alone are instructive and sound a warning worth noting about these individuals. Abusive, acting, actor, aggressive, amoral, arrogant, articulate, beguiling, bullshitter, bully, calculating, callous, chameleon, charismatic, charming, cheat, clever, cold, con man, conniving, contemptuous, controlling, criminal, cruel, cunning, dangerous, deceitful, deceptive, dehumanizing, deplorable, dishonest, disingenuous, disruptive, distracted, domineering, egocentric, evil, exploitative, fearless, forger, fraud, glib, grandiose, grandiosity, guiltless, hostile, imposter, inconsiderate, indifferent, infidelity, insensitive, insincerity, intense, interesting, intimidating, irksome, irresponsible, irritable, irritating, king, lawbreaker, liar, lord, loveless, Machiavellian, manipulative, mean, mesmerizing, narcissistic, Nazi, noxious, nuisance, parasitic, peacock, pedophile, player, predator, predatory, preoccupied, pretender, promiscuous, radiant, rattlesnake, risk-taker, ruler, sarcastic, seductive, self-centered, shallow, showman, slimy, smooth, snake, sneaky, superficial, swindler, tactless, temperamental, toxic, two-faced, tyrant, unapologetic, uncaring, uninterested, unreliable, unscrupulous, unsympathetic, vile, vindictive, witty. Their effect on you. Narcissists can be hard to spot at first because they may be intelligent, engaging, and interesting, even exuding an aura of omnipotence. They can be charming to those who can help them, but eventually they show their true colors. Sometimes you'll see overt displays of arrogance, haughtiness, or grandiosity that give you insight and may also make you feel that something isn't right. At other times, they can be aloof, patronizing, and distant, which leaves you with an unsavory feeling. Sometimes they withhold their affection, or they refuse to help or to honor their commitments. Whatever they do, the effect is always the same. They leave you feeling troubled, unfulfilled, or tormented. Narcissists can also be subtly cruel. They will intentionally fail to validate something important that you've accomplished, or any pain or suffering you may be feeling. By their deliberate indifference, they leave you to wither in lonely triumph or suffering. They are simply unwilling to take the slightest interest. To do so would be to make you feel good, and that is not what the narcissistic personality wants. Because they are so limited in empathy, they are like half people, looking for someone to complete them. Yet when they find someone, things go downhill because no one can really fulfill a narcissist. And they really aren't capable of fulfilling someone else. Thinking that you can make things work with a narcissist will take a terrible toll on you emotionally, psychologically, even physically. And that's their chief effect. They wear on you. Narcissistic personalities see your needs, wants, or desires only as distractions or as obstacles to their own. If you're inconvenienced, unhappy, frustrated, or stressed out, it's of no concern to them. But if they don't get their way, then you see their reaction, eye roll, smiles, contemptuous displays, pouting, impatience, petulance, huffiness, ranting, or they may just walk away. They're rather like children in adult bodies. At times we feel the pain of being with a narcissist instantly. At other times it registers like a dagger stab a few seconds later. Did I just hear that? We may be jolted awake at 2 a.m. as our subconscious kicks in and alerts us to something hurtful that they've done or lied about. Or their behavior triggers the sensation that something isn't quite right. Some people feel confused or physically queasy at these times. Some get sick or stressed out. I've had people tell me, when I have to deal with this person, I don't eat breakfast because I feel like I'm going to throw up. If you have these negative sensations, pay attention. Many of us have been taught to forgive and forget, especially with family and friends. The narcissistic personality is counting on you to do that, because when this person hurts you again and you're sitting there feeling startled, speechless, or defeated, the narcissist is feeling elevated, superior, and fulfilled. These emotional assaults will deplete you until you become putty in the narcissist's hands, or you have to take sick leave, as many do, just to cope. Pathological narcissism can go to extremes where laws often fail us. One woman came to the FBI to seek our assistance in a domestic matter. Unfortunately, there was little that we could do other than refer her to social services. She reported that for years her husband made her and her children sit on the floor whenever he called family meetings to castigate the family about this or that. Yes, he sat on a chair, as if on a throne, and she and the kids had to sit on the floor as they were berated or made to reveal their failings. Eventually, she was able to extricate herself and her children, but at great financial expense, and not before she and her kids had suffered significant psychological damage. Here was a case of a narcissistic personality wanting to debase his family to feel superior. Police departments around the country and around the world see this every day. The details are different, but the intent is the same. The glorification of one at the expense of others. When they aren't putting you down, narcissists are just being nasty. As Claire reported to me about her manager, he'd pass my desk and literally dump work on it with a scowl. Files would scatter, coffee would spill. He didn't care what I was doing or that my desk wasn't his dumping ground. I can't tell you how many people he made cry. Cry? Who does that kind of thing? Every time I hear of a woman or child who is repeatedly berated in public, beaten, or subjected to some form of domestic abuse, the first thought that comes to my mind is there's a narcissist in that house who devalues his partner or children and overvalues himself so much that he can slap, strike, or beat a family member. The case of Hedda Nussbaum and 6-year-old Elizabeth Lisa Steinberg, who lived with the Nussbaums, is a reminder of what it's like to live with a narcissist who gets away with abuse behind closed doors. Nussbaum, a book editor at the time she met attorney Joel Steinberg in 1975, has been quoted as initially viewing Steinberg as godlike, submitting to his direction on how to get ahead in business, but her life with Steinberg was anything but heavenly. He habitually criticized and denigrated her to the point of making her crawl on the floor like an animal. He would beat her almost daily, so much so that he disfigured her face. In 1987, in a fit of rage, he took it out on Lisa, killing her. It's a tragic example of how people involved with these narcissistic personalities over time are rendered pliant or inert. It was evident to prosecutors that Hedda had herself been so brutalized by Steinberg that she could not rise to defend an innocent child nor seek medical aid for Lisa. She personified what came to be called battered wife syndrome. More than 30 years later, it's still painful to think about what happened to Hedda and Lisa. Not everyone who associates with a narcissistic personality will suffer as Hedda and Lisa did. But know this, Every person I've ever talked to who has associated with a narcissistic personality has said the same thing. One way or another, to one degree or another, they were forbidden to flourish. How did they feel? In their own words, small, insignificant, inferior. Enough said. The narcissistic personality in relationships. Narcissists cannot express love as we understand it. For them, it's conditional, or comes with strings attached. In other words, I will do this for you, but I expect certain things from you in return. For the narcissist, love is about quid pro quo, something for something. It is not altruistic. People who've been romantically involved with a narcissist often tell me that in the beginning they were mesmerized by the person's charm, intelligence, attentiveness, and grand gestures, much as I described Henry Hill's early courtship with Karen in the movie Goodfellas. All of us are vulnerable to the narcissist's charisma and charm, but once an individual commits to the narcissistic personality, the charm quickly fades, leaving us at a loss to reconcile the alluring person we knew with the indifferent, manipulative partner we now face. At home, these individuals may demand that everything stop when they walk through the door. If they're a stay-at-home spouse, then your whole existence is about catering to their needs. And whatever you do, it's never enough. The narcissistic partner is never satisfied with your appearance, habits, tastes, activities, and abilities. Criticism can range from that look of disapproval to nagging to insults in private or in public. I asked one woman how often she was criticized by her spouse. Her answer was sobering. Every day, every single day of my life with him. I never did anything right in his eyes, and he taught the kids to criticize me and laugh at me as well. A friend of mine, now divorced, tells of spending hours searching for the right gift for his former wife. When he finally presented it to her, she tossed it on the counter and said, "Thank you," as if being handed a glass of water. She didn't even take it out of the box, he said. This seems like a small thing, but she had done this to him so many times over the years that it bore witness to the fact that she didn't care about him, but rather, as he discovered in other ways, cared only about getting ahead. She was using him to advance her career. This type of invalidation is consistent with the narcissistic personality. Want to make people feel worthless? Cheapen their efforts? Don't recognize their goodwill? Take no interest. That's how the narcissistic personality does it. And it hurts. The narcissistic personality's craving to look good at all costs can have devastating consequences for the rest of us. That's what happened to Miriam, who sought the help of the FBI because her husband had moved overseas and left her with no money. She wanted the FBI to track him down to claim the money he took from their joint bank account. According to Miriam, her husband was obsessed with buying ever more expensive houses in better neighborhoods, nicer cars, and pricier jewelry, while insisting on membership in two country clubs. She began to sense something was wrong, she claimed, when he started telling her to cut back on outings, summer vacations, clothes for the children, and food expenses. The latter was the last straw. He was still spending nearly $3,000 a month in club fees while asking her to cut back. She finally confronted him, as she didn't work and wanted to know what was going on. He turned to her and said almost casually, "We are bankrupt." There was no money left in the bank. Even though he owed millions, his narcissistic need to maintain his public image meant that he still had his hair and nails done every week and maintained his membership in two clubs, while Miriam was cutting back on food expenses and having anxiety and panic attacks. Eventually he just walked away, fled the country, and left her, clueless, penniless, and holding the bag, as she had co-signed on some loans. The depth of his callousness was breathtaking, as she discovered with each new phone call from a debt collector or attorney. When she eventually tracked him down overseas, his response was, "I owe you nothing. You had it pretty nice, thanks to me, for many years. You lived in a gated community. You should be thanking me." The story of Kim is equally sad in a different way. She approached me at an event where I spoke and asked if she could talk to me about something personal. She had married a man older by 9 years, a man with big plans who'd pursued her with such vigor that eventually she and her parents relented, charmed by his enthusiasm and persistence and his grand vision for their life together. But once married, she told me, nothing she did satisfied him. First, he insulted her privately, calling her ignorant, dumb, foolish. But in a short time, he did it publicly, much to her embarrassment. He blamed her for his failure in politics, not realizing, as she and her parents later did, that he was just a lot of hot air, unable and unwilling to accomplish anything he set out to do. Her friends disappeared, as he disapproved of people who didn't measure up and made their visits unpleasant. She told me she hadn't been visited by a friend in more than 10 years and rarely went out so as not to expose others to him or their troubled relationship. When her kids were growing up, they were forever being chastised by him, and she was reluctant to step in, except when he spanked them really hard. Most of the time, she turned a blind eye to his pelting with words because, as she said, the pain of dealing with him wasn't worth it. She had, as she put it, nothing left to fight with, nothing left to defend. Kim had been battered not with fists or a stick, but with constant vitriol and humiliation. Pictures of her from 2 decades earlier show her vibrant, beautiful, happy, and radiant. But when I met her, she was in her late 40s, and had wilted emotionally and physically, her face reflecting the life she'd lived since turning 22. She looked defeated. Both Kim and Miriam, in their own ways, said the same thing to me. If only I'd known what to look for. As a parent, the narcissistic personality doesn't have the emotional bandwidth to be truly giving to children. Just as narcissists idealize themselves, so they may expect perfection from their children, pushing children to be the best, even at things that children don't like or aren't good at, but may try hard, attempting to win the parents' approval, and constantly raising the bar. "Why didn't you get an A? Too bad you didn't make varsity. I know you can do better than that." Picture the stage mother, the raging father at the kid's soccer game, the parent who sees the child's failure to get into his alma mater or join her sorority as a reflection on him or her. Or these parents may use children as pawns to bring fame or fortune to themselves. For example, by pushing their children to win beauty contests or sports tournaments, make television appearances, or perform some other public or profitable endeavor. They'll swear that they're doing it for the child's benefit, never able to admit their narcissistic delight in fame by proxy. For narcissistic personalities, the light must in the end shine on them, even if it has to go through their children, but it must never fade. A woman at one of my behavioral seminars talked about being so wounded by being relentlessly pushed as a competitive athlete by her narcissistic mother that in adulthood she cut off all communication with her. Her sense of "I am being used" left an emotional gulf between them. If children fail to be perfectly athletic, studious, beautiful, or obedient, the narcissistic parent will begin to distance himself. Eventually, the child may be seen as more of a burden than a source of pleasure. Some narcissistic parents view children as convenient labor. Carlina is one such mother. In her 50s, she started adopting children from what she herself called the lower classes, and groomed them to work around the house. She'd say to them, even in the presence of outsiders, how they needed to take care of her in her old age because she had rescued them and it was their debt. Sad, really, how easily some devalue others, especially the narcissistic personality. Eventually, according to the clinician who worked on this case for the state, these adopted kids were able to emancipate themselves from this very selfish woman. But they suffered. As one of them said to her court-appointed counselor, "Even in the orphanage, life was better. I wasn't loved there, but at least I wasn't made to feel like a slave." And you thought Cinderella was just a fairy tale. It can be worse. There are untold cases of children going without food or medical assistance because their narcissistic parents just couldn't be bothered or didn't feel obligated. They may be tied to beds, locked in rooms, put up for adoption, or even killed. It's heartbreaking to see how children desperately continue to seek the narcissistic parents' attention, even as it's rationed out a few minutes here, a few hours there, not understanding that this parent can't love them as they long to be loved. As they grow older, they realize just how little they've been given, at what price, and with what strings attached. Any problems they have will be met with indifference or some version of, "Get over it, it's not so bad," or "Don't be a crybaby, that's nothing compared to what happened to me." Amanda still carries the emotional scars of growing up with a narcissistic mother. She wrote to me seeking advice, having read some of my books. If you ask her, she'll immediately tell you she never felt loved as a child. Ever. How terrible that must be. It seemed to her that she could never please or do anything right. Her mother was always questioning, challenging, ordering, never asking, inquiring, or showing much interest in her needs, wants, or desires. She wonders aloud why she feels so empty. It all goes back to how she was treated, as if she were nothing. Amanda reminded me that these childhood wounds then reopen repeatedly. What's the right Mother's Day gift for someone who criticizes everything? What do you write on the birthday card for a father who had no interest in you? If you move away, how often will you visit that person who didn't respect you or didn't show you love? Will you take on elder care duties? What will you say and do at this parent's funeral? Will you even go? Sometimes parents who know no boundaries raise a child who also has none, overindulging their child as they do themselves. Thus the child internalizes the parent's narcissism. And narcissism moves from generation to generation. Yes, children can be taught indifference by their parents. They grow up having little sympathy or respect for others. You can socialize a child into being nasty, denigrating others while feeling entitled. It's no surprise, then, when these individuals become bullies, either in their youth or as adults. We shouldn't expect flowers when we have planted and watered weeds. Encounters with the narcissistic personality. Whether they're backstabbing you out of a promotion, belittling you in a meeting, or butting in line at the checkout, these personalities don't care if they inconvenience, intimidate, or infuriate you in their quest to take care of number one, themselves. Every time I hear of a boss, manager, coach, teacher, or co-worker who snaps, barks, yells, screams, throws things, or bullies, I know we're dealing with a narcissistic personality. There's no excuse for any of those behaviors, and shame on an organization that keeps such a person around. Adults who act like children do serious damage in the grown-up world, and the greater their authority, the wider and more devastating their wake. Since narcissistic personalities have outsized egos, they also have an outsized sense of what belongs to them. In one FBI case I personally investigated, a government contractor who was working with highly sensitive and classified material contacted us for help after the computer systems administrator had taken over the company's computer. A review of his communications over the years with his superiors revealed him repeatedly bragging about how important he was and how "I did this" or "I did that." He would often speak of or even insist that these were my systems, my network, my codes, my protocols. They weren't his, of course. He was an employee, but his narcissism was evident in his writings. In the end, outside experts had to come in after hours and reclaim the system. And that is the problem with narcissistic employees. It may be your company, your assets, or your job on the line, but they don't see it that way. They think it belongs to them and take risks at your expense. In the end, we pay the price for the narcissistic personality's excesses, often at great physical, psychological, or financial cost. Narcissism isn't just about possessiveness. It can also escalate to violence that all too often goes unreported. A good example is the boss who throws things at you, grabs an arm, or, as in one case reported to me at a conference, blocks the doorway with his body and pushes a worker back into his office. What is unsettling is that the worker never reported this to his own organization. This wasn't the first time this had happened, nor the last. He had done it to others. But as this employee related, we had become accustomed to this bully. Unfortunately, people often dismiss or ignore these and other outrageous behaviors, saying they aren't so bad or won't happen again, or that it's easier to just tolerate the errant bully, especially if he's the boss. So they let themselves be bullied and steamrolled, problems get swept under the rug, good ideas aren't brought up because no one wants to risk being belittled, and valued workers get fed up and quit. Sometimes the narcissist's dysfunction becomes so entrenched that others cover for them, or they start to think that these out-of-bounds behaviors make sense, or excuse them because the person is brilliant, or okay most of the time. No, sorry, not okay, because you pay a heavy price for that kind of obnoxious nonsense. These incidents need to be reported where possible. Certainly HR needs to be made aware immediately. If for whatever reason you can't or don't do so, then record it immediately on a calendar, in an email to others, or even to yourself, on a cell phone, anywhere. Just make a record of exactly what happened, what was said, when, and where. Why? Because these individuals don't change. And if things get worse, and the matter comes up for review, or there's a civil action, whoever has the most accurate record of events wins. Narcissists aren't going to jot down, "I physically pushed so-and-so today," or "I called so-and-so a blank today." They don't see anything wrong with what they did. But you need to write it down and share it with others. For more strategies on dealing with the narcissistic personality, see Chapter 6. Self-Defense Against Dangerous Personalities. At the end of a seminar I gave in Virginia on dangerous personalities, a high-level executive approached me and asked if I would mind calling his boss, who could not attend the conference. They had a problem employee who met the criteria of a dangerous personality, and he felt I should talk to the CEO. I was shocked by the phone conversation I had with this CEO on my way to the airport. This employee's behavior had gotten so out of hand that it threatened the company's solvency. This executive told me one gut-wrenching story after another of total abuse of trust on the part of this individual who had compromised the personal information of clients, credit card information of clients as well as fellow employees, vital strategic data about the company's plans, and more. As if that weren't enough, the employee was basically graymailing, meaning stopping just short of blackmailing the CEO and other executives by threatening to use that information if he didn't get his way. The CEO had tried everything to placate this individual and work within HR department protocols, but they were getting nowhere. In fact, their efforts to reach out were actually empowering the narcissist. The CEO had been sickened to the point where he was seeing his family doctor and a psychologist to deal with the anxiety this employee was causing him. The narcissistic employee, of course, was just fine. The CEO said this had been going on for about 18 months. I asked, "He is your employee, he makes everyone upset, he is unsettling you and making you sick. and he's being cavalier with private and proprietary information from the company. Is that right? Yes, the CEO replied. And why is he being kept around? I asked. Because I actually thought things would get better. That is a common answer from those who don't understand the narcissistic personality. They innocently but ignorantly think that things will get better. They won't. Executives have told me that they've walked away from business deals because the other party was so toxic, so narcissistic, that they and their staff couldn't stand to be in the same room or even on the phone with them. Each time they thought it would get better. It didn't. In fact, I've heard stories where it got so bad that some became physically sick from dealing with these individuals. As the owner of a shipping company said to me after one such event, "Joe, no deal is worth my best people getting sick over, and me worrying the whole time whether I can trust this person." I walked away, and I'm happy I did. Narcissists can reach high levels in high-powered or high-trust professions, where transgressions and abuses of authority can have devastating consequences. When you have a police officer who lies, cheats, and steals, a health professional who believes himself the arbiter of who lives or dies, a coach who sexually abuses trusting children, the potential to do damage increases exponentially. Look at Rita Crundwell, comptroller and treasurer of Dixon, Illinois, who in 2012 pled guilty to embezzling $53 million over a 22-year period. This is an incredible amount of money, which she allegedly used in part to finance her interest in quarter horses. Her position of trust as comptroller of the city gave her expansive access to city funds that she used as a personal checkbook. We hear of corruption by government officials all the time, but the narcissistic personality can be found lurking anywhere. Anyone joining a religious sect that has a narcissistic personality as a leader can be assured of living a life that overvalues the leader at the follower's expense. As for cults, I've never studied one that didn't have a pathologically narcissistic individual as its leader. Jim Jones, Jonestown, Guyana. David Koresh, Branch Davidians, Charles Manson, Shoko Asahara, Om Shinriko, Joseph Dimambro, Order of the Solar Temple, also known as Ordre du Temple Solaire, Marshal Herf Applewhite Jr., Heaven's Gate, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, Rajneesh Movement, and Warren Steed Jeffs, polygamist leader and convicted child abuser were or are all notoriously narcissistic, intolerant of criticism, preaching grandiose ideas, highly entitled, setting themselves above others and the law. These individuals will sell you dreams that come at a high price, and you will pay. In November 1998, 1 year after the Heaven's Gate mass suicide in California, and on the 20th anniversary of the Jonestown massacre in Guyana, a small group of FBI profilers gathered at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, to look at the events surrounding Jim Jones and his cult, the People's Temple. It was a sobering day for me because even though I had read about the event over the years, seeing the actual crime scene photographs of the bloated bodies of children and babies gave me a new perspective on the massacre, the Reverend Jim Jones, and his narcissistic personality. For those who are interested, you can go online to the FBI's virtual vault and retrieve the actual investigation of the massacre, which is codenamed RIMER, Murder of Congressman Leo Ryan, FBI HQ file number 89-4286, and examine some of the same documents that I viewed. http://vault.fbi.gov/Jonestown/Jonestown/. If you read the thousands of pages from this online FBI report, or from one of the many books written about Jim Jones and the People's Temple, some lessons prominently stand out. 1. A striking number of people can be made to unconditionally put their lives in the hands of one individual. 2. Under the cloak of religion, a dangerous personality can get away with a great deal for a long time with no outside scrutiny. 3. Sect leaders can exert total control over the lives of their followers, ruling as if in a totalitarian regime. 4. Repeated psychological and physical abuse may be used to hamper the efforts of those who want to leave the sect. 5. Family and friends who fear for sect members will be persistently thwarted or frustrated in their efforts to help or rescue them. 6. The narcissistic personality of a cult leader is palpable, as was evident in Jones's words and writings, which should have been warnings to prospective members. 7. Only a handful of sect members may see the sect leader for what he is. Only a few saw Jim Jones as a toxic and dangerous narcissistic personality. 8. Once vested and committed to the cult leader, followers are reluctant or unwilling to see the looming peril or to resist the urgings of the narcissistic personality, even when the lives of their children are also in peril. For the profilers looking at the Jonestown massacre, our findings were sobering, particularly because we had seen ample evidence of what we can expect from the narcissistic personality in past cult leaders. For example, Charles Manson, David Koresh, Marshall Herf Applewhite Jr., and the danger they present to the non-skeptical believer. Our limited analysis revealed the following. 1. Cult leaders will continue to attract people who are unwilling or unable to discern when they are being manipulated or exploited. 2. Cults that make leaving difficult, via psychological, social, or physical pressure, achieve compliance at a great psychological cost, even years later. 3. Isolation of the sect is key to the narcissistic personality to avoid criticism, ridicule, or scrutiny, and to control the sect. 4. The narcissistic personality thrives in a leadership position within a cult, and will do almost anything to remain the leader, including marginalizing or destroying those who oppose them. 5. The narcissistic personality as leader of a sect acts with impunity in almost all cases, allowing the leader greater privileges, for example, travel, clothes, luxury items, sex, than sect members. 6. The narcissistic personality as sect leader purports to have all the answers and secrets to a better life and makes all the decisions. 7. Because of constitutional protections around religion and voluntary associations, there is little that law enforcement can do to intervene in sects unless there is a clear violation of state or federal law. In most cases, because of secrecy, it is difficult to intervene, as we saw with the case of Warren Jeffs of the Fundamentalist Church of Latter-day Saints in southern Utah in 2006. Sex with underage girls. Or, tragically, police come on the scene too late, as happened in Jonestown. Those were our observations about cults, but if you think about it, many of these same characteristics, secrecy and isolation, psychological and or physical abuse to weaken free will, absolute power concentrated in one person's hands, can be found in toxic work environments or organizations, in homes ruled by tyrants, or even in nation-states. History bears witness to the fact that pathological narcissism is at the root of terrible suffering. Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Pol Pot stand out as examples of leaders with narcissistic personalities who exterminated millions, all because of their extreme grandiosity. They believed that only they had the answers. These and more we'll discuss in later chapters. But to give you a glimpse of how the narcissistic mind works, here's just one example that might be laughable if it weren't so lamentable. Joseph Stalin's unequaled capacity for cruelty was nearly equaled by his narcissistic craving for recognition, as reflected in the many official and honorary titles he subscribed to, including Generalissimus of the Soviet Union, Supreme Commander-in-Chief, Chairman of the State Committee for Defense, General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Bolshevik Communist Party, General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, Chairman of the Council of People's Commissars of the USSR, the Corypheus, literally the leader of the chorus of science, father of nations and brilliant genius of humanity. All these to mask his humble beginnings as Yosif Vissarionovich Zhugashvili, a plebeian Georgian name that he later changed to Joseph Stalin to reflect his view of himself, literally, as the man of steel. Stalin means steel in Russian. Such are the ways of narcissists, even when they are of humble origin. Your Dangerous Personalities Checklist. Warning Signs of the Narcissistic Personality. As I noted in the introduction, I developed various behavior-based checklists during my career to help me assess individuals to see if they were dangerous personalities. This particular checklist will help you determine if someone has the features of the narcissistic personality and where that person falls on a continuum or spectrum from arrogant and obnoxious to indifferent and callous to abusive and dangerous. This will help you decide more precisely how to deal with this person, determine his or her toxicity, and assess whether he or she may be a threat to you or others. This checklist, as well as the others in this book, was designed to be used in everyday life by you and me, people who are not trained mental health professionals or researchers. It is not a clinical diagnostic tool. Its purpose is to educate, inform, or validate what you have witnessed or experienced. Read each statement in the checklist carefully and check the statements that apply. Be honest. Think about what you have heard an individual say, or seen him or her do, or what others have expressed to you. Obviously, the best evidence is what you yourself have observed and how you feel when you are around or interact with this person. Check only the statements that apply. Don't guess or include more than meet the criteria exactly. If in doubt, leave it out. Some items seem repetitive or appear to overlap. That is intentional, to capture nuances of behavior based on how people typically experience or describe these personalities. It is very important that you complete the entire checklist as designed to increase its reliability. Each complete checklist covers very subtle yet significant issues that you may never have thought about. Some items may help you remember events you'd forgotten. Please listen to each statement, even if you feel you've heard enough or that the first few items don't seem to apply. Gender pronouns, he, she, etc., are used interchangeably in the statements. Any statement may be applicable to any gender. We'll evaluate scores when you're done, but for now, check off each item below that applies. 1. Project self-importance beyond position, experience, or what has been duly earned or deserves. 2. Has a grandiose idea of who he is and what he can achieve. 3. Often talks about his need to lead, to be in charge, to exercise power, or for achieving immediate success. 4. Believes she should only associate with other special, successful, or high-status people. 5. Requires excessive admiration from others. 6. Has a sense of entitlement, expecting to be treated as someone special or given priority at all times. 7. Is interpersonally exploitative of others and takes advantage of others for personal gain. 8. Lacks empathy and is unable to recognize the needs or suffering of others. 9. Is often envious of others or believes others are envious of him. 10. Is arrogant and haughty in behavior or attitude. 11. Has a tendency to see her problems as unique or more acute than anyone else's. 12 has an exaggerated sense of privilege that allows him to bend rules and break laws. 13 is excessively self-centered to the point of alienating others by being so I or me-oriented. 14 is hypersensitive to how she is seen or perceived by others. 15 has regularly irritated or upset you, and others complain of the same. 16 routinely spends an inordinate amount of time on grooming, looking good, and being pampered. 17 tends to overvalue himself and his capabilities in almost all things. 18 has devalued others as being inferior, incapable, or not worthy. 19 has demonstrated little sympathy or empathy for others. Nevertheless, she expects others to show her empathy. 20 has ignored the needs of others, including biological, food, water, etc., physical, housing, clothing, etc., emotional, love, touching, hugging, etc., and financial needs, on multiple occasions. 21 is not happy when others succeed or receive recognition. 22 is considered to be or acts like a bully. 23 talks at you rather than with you. 24 needs to be the center of attention and does things to distract others to ensure being noticed. For example, arriving late, wearing eye-catching clothing, using dramatic language, or making theatrical entrances. 25. When she communicates with you, it feels as if she is sending messages but is not receiving messages. Communication is only one way. 26. Assumes others value him as much as he does himself and is shocked to learn that they don't. 27. Insists on having the best of everything. House, car, electronics, jewelry, clothes, even when she can't afford it. 28. Appears to have difficulty comprehending deep emotions. Seems emotionally detached at times when deeply felt emotions are most needed. 29. Has a need to control others and demands total loyalty at all times. 30. Behaves as though people are objects to be used, manipulated, or exploited. 31. Repeatedly has violated boundaries of rules, privacy, secrecy, or social decorum. 32. Only sees her own problems and repeatedly ignores the problems or struggles others may have. 33. Seems to lack altruistic qualities. Everything is done for a selfish purpose. Rarely does anything for the good of others. 34. Even without any kind of demonstrated achievement, acts self-important or accomplished. 35. Has a need to habitually inflate personal accomplishments, deeds, or experiences. 36. When others speak of accomplishments, he boasts of his own accomplishments or orients the conversation so that his accomplishments are also recognized. 37. Feels entitled to any one of these: success, fame, fortune, or sex, with no legal, moral, or ethical inhibitions. 38. At work, habitually competes with peers for attention or praise and devalues them to garner favor with those in authority. 39. When criticized, seems insecure and tends to lash out. 40. Has acted imperious at times, not wishing to know what others think, have planned, or are concerned about. 41. Has acted or believes self to be omnipotent, unwilling to realize her own weaknesses or frailties. 42. Is superficially charming or interesting. 43. Has presented himself as something he is not, imposter, such as a doctor, military officer, astronaut, or Navy SEAL, for example. 44 is very interesting to be around at first, but after a while saps you of energy or interest. 45 has made you feel that her cup must always be filled as yours runs empty. 46 has devalued you or your work and made you feel worthless without any consideration for your feelings. 47. Has shown interest in and curiosity about how others achieved success, but is unwilling to dedicate or sacrifice himself to that effort. 48. Has grandiose fantasies of achievement, high political office that are rarely fulfilled legitimately or at all. 49. Is preoccupied with achieving social acclaim or political office by any means. 50. Has repeatedly bought expensive or valuable things for herself, but refuses to do the same for family members. 51. Constantly underestimates others' ability and capacity to perform. 52. Sees himself as superior in intellect, capacity, or looks compared to others. 53. Enjoys putting others down so that she feels better about herself. 54. Has publicly belittled those who don't measure up to expectations, including his own children. 55. Is disinterested in knowing more about you and lacks normal curiosity in others. 56. At times displays a certain coldness or aloofness that makes you worry about who she really is and or whether or not you really know her. 57. When interacting with others, perceives benign actions such as seat adjusting, turning, checking a phone, or looking at watch as disinterest, and becomes unnecessarily offended or irritated. 58. Treats those who are deemed to be below him with contempt and arrogance. 59. Only appreciates those who can do something for her. 60. Has interpersonal relationships that seem always impaired or in difficulty due to his ego and grandiosity. 61. Sees herself as having special knowledge or unique understanding and talks about herself that way. 62. Has a personality that wears on you or you find him annoying. 63. Is inappropriately boastful of accomplishments. 64. The word I dominates conversations. She is oblivious to how often she references herself. 65. Comes across as self-righteous and above scrutiny. 66. Has achieved much success, but at the price of others whom she rarely, if ever, properly credits. 67. Has commented that this person or that group is inferior or is worthless. 68. Favors the use of cocaine, specifically, to potentiate his grandiosity, abilities, or self-worth. 69. Claims to be an exceptional lover or seducer. Boasts about repeated conquests. 70. Hates to be embarrassed, or to fail publicly. 71. Doesn't ever seem to feel guilty for anything she has done wrong, and never apologizes. 72. Believes he has the answer and solution to most problems, no matter how complex. 73. Believes herself to always be right and everyone else is wrong. 74. Sees those who disagree with him as enemies. 75. Has resorted to cheating, conning, scheming, embezzling, or other white-collar crimes to achieve success. 76. Is often rigid, unbending, and insensitive. 77. Tries to control what others do, or think. 78. Tends to be possessive of loved ones or family members, and interferes with their freedom. Doesn't like it when friends or outsiders visit. 79. Offers short-term superficial or self-serving demonstrations of empathy. 80. One senses he wants to destroy or spoil the fortunes of those he envies or is in competition with. 81. Has refused to look at or recognize a proud accomplishment of yours or fails to acknowledge pain and suffering of others. 82. Often reacts to criticism with retaliation, vilification, counterattack, rage, or callousness. 83. can't be bothered to work, claiming it would interfere with thinking, planning, networking, studying, or preparing. 84. Joined a club or purchased a golf membership or organization, just to be seen in the right places with the right kind of people but can ill afford to do so. 85. Sees flaws in others routinely but none in herself. 86. Does not like to be criticized.